Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitt. Today we are previewing the Kansas-Iowa State football game that is happening on Saturday. I have a feeling this might be a little bit more painful than I initially thought it was going to be, but hopefully to make this preview as painless as possible, I've brought back on Levi Stevenson from Wide Right Natty Light. He's been on here a few times. We've enjoyed having him on here every time. So we thought it would be great to bring him back to at least try to make this as painless as we possibly can. So Levi, how are you doing tonight?
You know, I'm pretty good, actually. It's the weather up here is finally starting to warm up and be like early November weather, like it's supposed to be, or mid-November, yeah, whatever you want to call it.
It's weird because I saw that the forecast for the game is supposed to be like 41 degrees, which I know that they've played a decent number of late afternoon or evening games, but I think that's the warmest it's been in like the last 8 or 9 years for this, or I guess like four or five trips up to.
Probably. I don't know. I was here for the 2013 Ice Bowl. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't there, but I heard all about it.
3-9 Iowa State versus 2-10 Kansas. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was the icy toilet bowl, I think is what a lot of people decided
to call
it.
Something like that. It's like if you filled up a toilet and you threw it in like a vat of liquid nitrogen, it's just a bunch of frozen turds. That's exactly what it was.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. I'm sure everyone's enjoying that visual.
Yep, you're welcome. I am here. Yeah. When I hop on other people's podcasts, I enjoy being an agent of chaos.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I like to do the same thing, so I can definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, right, you do.
So to turn our attention, yeah. Oh, yeah. I haven't even mentioned. Well, you know what? We'll go ahead and get this out of the way early because, you know, it was probably about 3-4 weeks ago. I made an appearance on the 10-12 podcast, which is run by the people over at Land Grant Gauntlet, where I also write a few articles from here, you know, from time to time. And it was an episode that actually didn't even get published because we had technical difficulties with the other guest that was on that episode. But Philip, in his infinite wisdom, decided to clip out some of my more controversial hot takes that I still maintain weren't actually hot takes. They've kind of come true a little bit. But
Phillips is a sly little devil, isn't he? He's a sly fox.
Of course. He pulled three clips from that episode, and two of them were me saying things that got a whole bunch of people pissed off. And then the one that he pulled of him was some innocuous little, you know, clip that everybody was thinking anyway, so no one really, really cared at all. But of course my mentions got to go crazy because he decided to, you know, grab something that would offend the most rabid fan base, I think, in the Big 12, at least on Twitter. So
that's the thing is, if you come at Iowa State fans on Twitter, they will grab themselves, all of their family members, and all of their friends, and it will come back at you. It is a relentless mob.
You know what? I do want to actually provide a little bit of context, though, to that, because – and I realize this has it has the potential to get Iowa State fans riled up even more. But when I said that, what I was talking about was the fact that Iowa State had yet to face an offense in the Big 12 that could put up explosive plays. And yes, Kansas has not lived up to that billing since the time that I recorded that.
They were playing well at that time, though.
Right, they were playing well at the time. They continued to play well against Texas Tech the week afterwards. Like, there was definitely the potential that if things were going the way that they kept trending, that everything that I thought at the time was a possibility would be coming true at this point. But I still think that the point stands that Iowa State has not handled explosive offenses very well. They have done a decent job of people's base defense or like base offensive sets, you know, runs up the middle, things like that. Like your bread and butter of defense, they are really, really good at. And so I think their defense has been able to handle that really well. But when you get to an offense that is built on, you know, trick plays or, you know, explosive plays or, you know, getting out on the sideline and kind of attacking the edges, I don't think that Iowa State has really handled that very well. And we've seen that in the last couple games that they've had.
I would have a couple minor tweaks / counters. So Oklahoma State, if you watch them, they had a few big plays that were largely a product of bad tackling. So it wasn't like a coverage issue necessarily, because they were almost, actually, I think all of them were like screen passes that got broken free going down the field. And they were all as a result of missed tackles, which has since gotten cleaned up pretty significantly. And we saw it against Texas. They didn't miss. I don't think they missed a single tackle all night. And then you get Oklahoma. Obviously, they gave up points. Oklahoma didn't really hit very many big plays. I mean, CeeDee Lamb had the one, but that's CeeDee Lamb after the catch, which, I mean, he burns right. everybody. So I'm not even really counting that. But otherwise, Oklahoma had to kind of truck their way up the field a little bit. They didn't get a pop off the big plays. They did give up points, but they didn't get a pop off the big plays like they usually do. And then especially in the second half, Iowa State totally suffocated them. And then obviously Texas, their big plays came at the end of the second half when Iowa State was playing prevent defense for, I have no idea reason why. I have no idea why they dropped in a prevent, because the regular defense had been so good up to that point. So I would say they have been giving up big plays more often than they did, like, let's say last year. But there's some important context that needs to go with that, that, you know, the first couple games, the first time they were giving up big plays against Oklahoma State would be the kind of the first one that really stands out, that they gave up big plays. There were some tackling issues that have since been resolved. Oklahoma got a big play out of CeeDee Lamb, but he has a big play every week. And, you know, and then otherwise was bottled up. Texas was, it was situational, but they also held Texas to 54 total rushing yards on 26 right. carries. So, you know, there's some context to be, you know, I would agree with the statement that they have not been as good at stopping the big plays as last year, but I would say when it was more of an issue, it was fundamentals, the details that Matt Campbell talks about quite a bit. And a lot of those have gotten cleaned up, and we saw them get cleaned up a little bit last week. You know, for the most part, yeah. I would say Texas went on their scoring drives. They still had to kind of march up the field a little bit. They didn't really get a pop off the big plays. The only really two big plays that came in that game were the two big catches right at the end of the first half. And that was, I would argue, I mean, those were two genuinely blown coverages. And I actually talked about them in my film room article this week too, where it was two consecutive plays. Texas ran exactly the same play to exactly the same receiver, and it was exactly the same throw. And on both plays, Marshall Spears made exactly the same misstep. And you know, yep. And that's in that, it, you know, some defenses make mistakes, and that was, you know, that was a case of a play that maybe last year's defense makes, you know, who knows. But one thing that this team has done a good job is learning from their mistakes. They don't really, it's very rare to see them make the same mistake two games in a row. So they're cleaning it up in a pretty quick hurry, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, and to kind of, you know, clarify, I was making comments based off of what I had seen from the Iowa State defense at the time. I still think, and I thought then, and I still think now, that they are probably, you know, in the top three or four in terms of defenses in the Big 12. I think at the time I thought they were third behind like TCU and Baylor. I think TCU has fallen off at this point. And I like the only two defenses that are, I think, are definitely better than Iowa State's are Baylor and Kansas State at this point. And
you're gonna put Kansas State's defense up there?
Well,
I'm contesting you on that only because their I believe it is their rush defense is super bad. Like, it's really bad. It's they're really good against the pass. I was looking. I'm basing this off of Parker Fleming, who writes for Frogs of War. Every week he does. Like an expected points added and stuff like that, like some more metrics and right. stuff like that. And Kansas State's defense grades out really good in pass defense, but their rush defense is actually really, really bad.
I'm wondering if my thoughts on that is partly, I guess, colored by the fact that they completely shut down Kansas. The one thing I think that makes Kansas State's defense a little bit better than maybe some of the advanced stats really kind of show is just how dominant they are on the line. And it's weird that their running game has some issues, but I think most of what I've seen in their running game that has problems is when it gets out, when running backs are able to get on the edge, they're able to kind of take advantage of that, because Kansas State has a problem that a lot of Big 12 defenses have, in that their cornerbacks seem to have issues, especially against the run. So if you're able to get out wide on Kansas State's defense, then you're going to have a lot of success, I think, running.
That's an issue that we'll be talking about next week before we play Kansas State too. And one thing that's worth noting too is Iowa State's offensive line has played really well the last few weeks. They absolutely dominated Texas's defensive line last week. I pulled it in our film room. I touched on it a little bit, but right now Iowa State's offensive line is playing like a top three unit in the conference right now. Especially when you can combine them with the three tight ends that are all very, very good run blockers. The blocking capacity in Iowa State's run game has ramped up pretty significantly. And it's been aided by the play calling and by Breece Hall's and by Breece Hall's skill set. It's kind of a feedback loop where the play calling is doing a great job of getting Breece to the edge and taking advantage of his skill set, his extra burst that a guy like Dave Montgomery didn't have. He's got a lot better top gear than David did. When he's running in a straight line, he's a little bit sturdier than David. Not quite as miss in a phone booth type of guy, but he's really good when they run him like on sweeps and they run him on off tackle, they run him on pitches and stuff like that, getting him to the outside and letting him build up that speed, that forward momentum. So the play calling has aided that. And you have Iowa State's offensive line who's doing an excellent job. You've got receivers that are willing and ready blockers downfield, and you've got three tight ends that are, I would argue they're probably 1, 2, and 3 for the best run blocking tight ends in the conference right now.
Yeah. So I guess I will concede the point that I don't think I fully accounted for how bad Kansas State's defense looked last week against West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I am definitely willing to concede the point that Iowa State probably has the second best defense in the conference right now, which is definitely an improvement. Like, they've definitely handled the last few weeks better than I thought they could have. But I think moving forward, like, Iowa State is definitely a team that seems to be on the rise overall. They got a little unlucky in that game against Texas, I think. But it was a little surprised with that result, to be honest.
They're unlucky in certain areas, and then they were really lucky. Luck is kind of a funny thing in football because there's the concept of luck where it truly is just a random thing. But Matt Campbell has actually always preached on that. You kind of make your own luck. You put yourself in position to be lucky by being detail oriented and putting yourself in a position to do that, as opposed to just relying on a crazy bounce or something like that. So,
right.
A great example right there at the end of the Texas game is when that last false start that gave Iowa State the first down that allowed them to run out the rest of the clock. You could call that lucky, saying Malcolm Roach jumped off sides, but actually, if you go back and watch the replay, and they talked about it a little bit in the post-game press conference too, is that was a designed hard count. They actually got Texas on a hard count there. So while you're hoping that they bite, you're not necessarily counting on it, but they manufactured some luck in that situation where they put themselves in a position to potentially draw Texas off sides. Texas bit. Iowa State got the first down, and obviously we know what happened from there. So, it is kind of interesting. But the bad breaks, definitely against Oklahoma, you saw some bad breaks. Oklahoma State, same way.
Yeah. It's been an interesting last few games for Iowa State.
to say the least.
Yeah, gosh.
It's been a damn roller coaster, man. Let me tell you what.
Yeah, gosh. Well, it's kind of funny because I was watching a lot of last week's action, and I think I'm still getting a lot of it jumbled up in my head, but I was not very happy with the way that Baylor Oklahoma game ended. But the Iowa State Texas game, I had just kind of assumed that Texas was going to end up winning it because they were up, 21-20, and it was 21-20 for so long. And it seemed like they were running the clock out and Iowa State wasn't really getting anything. And then they were able to kind of, I guess, reverse Dicker the kicker Texas.
Well,
in that,
and the key thing too, one. Is what they did against Texas is that, I mean, Texas's game is built around getting some deep plays in the passing game, but also is also the power run game, obviously with Sam Ellinger and all those running backs, Ingram and I don't know whoever else, they got a bunch of them. But Iowa State, like I said, 54 yards on 26 carries. I mean, that's beyond slowing the run down. I mean, that's total shutdown, cannot run the ball. When Texas needed to chew clock, Iowa State was stopping them for 0-1-2 yards consistently, boom, 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 getting them in third and long. Then obviously that last Texas pass where it gets batted down by a defensive tackle on a screen. It's what they did there. I mean, they forced Texas to be a very one-dimensional team. Like they were, they were playing aggressive. They were even taking away short passes. I mean, really, if Texas wanted to move the ball, they either had to, you know, throw it underneath and hope they could get a little bit after the catch, or they had to try to find something 30 yards downfield, which they were not able to do very often. And when you can take a team like that and make them truly one-dimensional and actually and take them out of the dimension that they're most comfortable in, that's a big, big time asset. Texas probably, I mean, they could have done some things differently that would have helped them, but I think Iowa State, again, you go back to Iowa State putting themselves in position to force mistakes from the other person, because Iowa State didn't make hardly any mistakes the whole night. I mean, the one-on-the-one interception, but that was, if you go back and watch the tape, it was Michael Pettway what made his break too slow, and because that's it was a timing route on a slant, and Pettway broke too slow, so it wasn't even actually Brock Purdy's fault on that one either. But you know, it's creating their own luck. It's creating advantageous situations where by being more detail oriented in their team, that they can create an advantage in particular situations.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I do want to talk a little bit more about the Iowa State offense, because I'm really interested about a few of these things. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so this Iowa State offense has puzzled me all year long. It seems like every time that they get something going, they have a hiccup and then seem to have problems. The only one constant, I think, it's even hard to say that he's a constant, because since he's broken onto the scene, he's been fairly consistent for this team, but it took him a while to get going in running back Breece Hall. But what's been going on with this offense all year long?
Well, for the first few games, the offensive line was still trying to get their feet under, and Breece Hall didn't really play. He only had like 11 total carries going into the West Virginia game. Since West Virginia, since he actually got the starting spot and they started feeding him the ball, he's averaging like 130 yards again on the ground in a game. I think it's like 125 or 130 rushing yards a game since he started against West Virginia. So I'm not going to really count the first few games for him, partially because they were still trying to figure out there, and Breece may not have been ready to take on that kind of load earlier in the season. They were giving carries to Sheldon Crony and Kennedy Wongu and Johnny Lang and stuff like that. And Johnny Lang has actually gotten a few carries the last few games and sort of been a decent spell for him, for Breece, when needed, but they were still kind of experimenting. They kind of were rotating four guys, or even five guys, if you're killing Jarrell Brock, at the running back spot. The offensive line was still getting its feet under it, and you could tell that they just weren't quite meshing just yet. So it looked bad because they weren't finished. And actually, well, they were still moving the ball really well in the middle of the field, and they were just struggling, to finish off drives, because I don't think they were. The plan on how to use the tight ends, I don't think, had been fully fleshed out just yet. But as the season has gone on, obviously, we've seen Iowa State really, really harness that tight end spot and gash some teams with it. And I don't think that was quite fully fleshed out. But since the West Virginia game, Breece Hall has been, I mean, nothing short of outstanding. I mean, yeah, it's pretty much Chuba Hubbard, him, and then the rest of the conference right now, as far as since Iowa State's West Virginia game, since then, as far as performers in the conference. And he's gaining national attention too when he's playing, you know, when he has great games against Oklahoma and Texas and stuff like that. You know, he's gaining lots of national attention too, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see him on some preseason lists next year, just because of what we're seeing so far. And part of his success, too, has come with the development of the offensive line, which has done a much better job the last few weeks of getting him space to run in. And then, and like I said, the tight ends are part of that, too, because they're to the point now where there is a tight end on the field for every single play. And I think it's like another like 50% have two tight ends, and now they're like to 20 or 30% have all three tight ends, which is a really difficult formation to guard because – especially in the Big 12 when people are trying to run five or six defensive backs, dealing with three guys that where the smallest one is 6'6", 260, you know, that's a problem. That's really hard to deal with, is when you start overloading formations with essentially eight linemen. That's a huge problem for Big 12 teams to deal with, and that's what they've been doing recently, and they've been gashing people in the running game with that. And the trick has been, and we saw it against Oklahoma State, what happens when you get away from the running game, when Brock Purdy throws 62 passes and then, you know, they get picked off because Oklahoma State's dropping coverage and all sorts of stuff, is that when you feed Breece Hall the ball, and when you stay consistent about it, and you maintain a balanced attack like they did against Oklahoma when they came back, and like they did against Texas, where they moved the ball extremely well. When you maintain a balanced attack and you feed Breece the ball, good things happen. Because I'm not sure what his yards per carry average is right now, but I'm sure it's over five. The running game has been leaps and bounds better than what we saw at the very beginning of the season. And it's part of it has become, it's come from play calling, and it's come from intentionally maintaining a balanced attack. And you're seeing a little bit less running from Brock Purdy. He will still take off and he'll still do Brock Purdy things on the run when he needs to, but they're not really running very many design QB runs anymore because they know they've got Breece there. That if you can give it to Breece Hall instead of Brock Purdy and let your running back get you 6 yards instead of hoping your quarterback does, you give it to the running back right every time.
Oh yeah, right. You also don't want to expose your quarterback to all those hits that are going to come from that.
You let him be dangerous when he needs to be, when he can pick up yards on his, like he did at the end of the Oklahoma game where he juked that defender straight into a body bag. Stuff like that. Brock will definitely, he'll still do that until he can't run anymore sometime whenever he's in the NFL. You don't want to rely on that. Like you saw against TCU where they kind of relied on him for a running game and he had like 100 and something yards rushing to go with his passing or whatever. You're okay with it because he came out of it. He had a really good game, no doubt. You're okay with it after the fact, but you don't want to make a habit out of that.
Right. It's a nice weapon to have if you use it sparingly.
You use it enough to make a defense respect it, but you don't rely on it.
Exactly. All right. So that actually kind of naturally leads me into my next question is, it seems like the last 4 or 5 years here, Iowa State has had some real problems in terms of starting really slow in the beginning of the season, the first three, four games. And then they turn it on and they look unstoppable almost in a lot of cases. They haven't won every game, after that point, but they become a completely different team. They're a lot more competitive. The offense clicks a whole lot better. The defense seems to get everything nailed down. Is there something to them starting really slow? Is it just that it takes the coaching staff that long to get all the pieces in place, or is there something else going on here?
It's sort of the first one. I think what you're seeing, though, is people kind of forget now that we're a few years into this where Iowa State was when Matt Campbell showed up, and it was a disaster. The team had almost no actual Big 12 talent outside of Alan Lazard, Joel Lanning, and who wasn't even a linebacker at that point, and maybe a couple defensive players. There wasn't a lot of actual Big 12 talent on the Iowa State roster. You had a lot of guys that would fit right in. They would fit right in someplace in the Mountain West or at Akron or something like that. But that not good enough to compete in the Big 12. Matt Campbell's recruiting class has made a significant jump really quickly, and they've been getting better. Guys that are more talented. And so if you have a bunch of, juniors and seniors from Paul Rhodes teams, or you have some more talented freshmen and sophomores or guys that are new to the system playing, it's going to take them a little bit longer to get to kind of get in gear. And part of it too, you've had a little bit, because you had Tom Manning as their offensive coordinator 2 years ago, then last year they didn't have a coordinator, and now you're back to a coordinator again. So that's kind of part of it too, where you have some little changes too. And I think it just takes them a little bit to kind of experiment because they've got so many pieces on offense, especially this year where you've got, I don't know if there's a streak or anything like that. I don't know if there's a specific number off the top of my head, but I don't know if I've seen a game so far this year where at least 8 or 9 guys haven't caught a pass so far. I mean, there's so many weapons on the field for Iowa State, and they're trying to find ways to get them the ball. And when you have that many options, sometimes you get a little bit distracted and you say, well, we should try to do this here, this there, this here. It was really simple, like we saw last year, where if you get in trouble, throw it out to Hakeem and he catches it. And that's just what it is. But now you've got so many options this year that you get a little bit scatterbrained, and then it takes a little bit to figure out the roles of everybody, where instead of DeShonte Jones catching 16 passes in the first game of the season and then catching like 2 next week, now you have him catching, 4 to 6 every week because you have a defined role for him. You have a defined role for LaMichael Petway. You have a defined role for Charlie Kohler. And you have a defined role for Tariq Milton and Breece Hall and Brock Purdy. As the season goes on, they get those roles refined out, because I think right now they have, It's not like an embarrassment of riches like you see at like Oklahoma where they've just got five stars sitting in the third on the depth chart. But you know, they have so many weapons right now, more weapons than they've probably ever had. Is that they didn't lose focus, but they had to focus themselves and figure out defined roles for people and not say, you know, and not try to spread it out too much, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So the other thing that I'm kind of curious about is it seems like this is the first year since Matt Campbell came where he has the quarterback that was the starter at the beginning of the year is the quarterback
quiet.
At the end of the year.
Nope. Quiet. Shh. I ain't.
Well, about, no.
I ain't having you. Sorry, don't you put that evil on me, Andy?
I'm not trying to introduce a jinx or anything like that, honestly. But it seemed because in all the prior years, it was right at halfway through the season where they made the quarterback switch. So I think you guys are safe at this point. The question, like, how strange is it though, having come into the year? And actually, it looks like it was four games of the old quarterback because I'm looking back at the previous ones. It was four games of the old quarterback, and then it switches. And so it's a little strange. I'm wondering though, you know, is this something that they've just kind of been getting used to and that it's taken them that long to identify all the talent? I think everyone kind of thought with how good of a year Purdy had last year that they were fairly set, you know, in terms of how they were going to try to run things. And while they definitely lost some big players.
But the year before that, we thought we were set with Kyle Kemp. And the year before that, we thought we were set with Jacob Park, you know, and the year before that, we thought we were set with Joel Lanning, you know, so it's part now, a couple of those have been injuries. Jake Park, well, it wasn't an injury so much, but it was, he left the team. And then Kyle Kemp last year was an injury and then went to Zeb Nolan, who just sucked for a couple games. And then Brock Purdy came in. Joel Lanning got supplanted a few years ago because Jacob Park had played really well towards the end of the season. You know, things like that. So it's been tricky. It hasn't been weird necessarily. It's been relieving not having to worry about who's your starting quarterback and not having to think, oh, I hope he does good this game or we might have to bench him. Like, one, I've Brock Purdy's bad games still look pretty good.
Right.
And, there's not once where Brock Purdy has like struggled at all and it never crossed anybody's mind like, oh, maybe we should take him out. Like, nobody ever questions that. And part of it kind of it relates back to what we were talking about just a little bit ago with starting slow and having to introduce new talent and stuff like that is that it takes a while when rosters are as depleted as they are, and West Virginia is going through this right now, is that when rosters are as depleted of high-level talent as Iowa State's was, it takes a while to introduce that talent while trying to win football games and maintain stability. Because sometimes you have JUCOs come in or whatever it is, and maintain roster stability while trying to get that talent in, get them experience, and hope that they can do that. Because I mean, young talent is still is usually inconsistent. Even freshmen, even the best freshmen in America, you know, they still have their ups and downs because they're freshmen. And when you have right. when you're playing lots and lots of young guys, sometimes you start slow, sometimes you're a little inconsistent. But now you've got Brock Purdy, he's pretty damn consistent at this point. You just know you're going to get a good game out of Brock Purdy. He's not going to make any dumb mistakes, you know, things like that. He could stand to cut down the interceptions a little bit, but I think that gets a little bit overblown even because if you watch a lot of them, a lot of them were route running issues with the receivers, but they're cleaning that up quite a bit. And that's just kind of part of it too, is that now we see that Brock Purdy has been really consistent and now the offense is really piling on the yardage. I think Iowa State is, I don't know, third in the country in passing offense right now, yardage wise. I think that's what it is. Brock Purdy's sitting at third in the country in passing right now. And I think he's like fifth or sixth in total offense or fourth, maybe. I'm not sure. So they're putting up yardage and finishing drives in the red zone has been hit or miss. Sometimes they're really, really good when they can get the tight ends free. Sometimes they don't always finish the drives out, and that's still an area of improvement. But they're getting consistent now. They've got a groove, and the great part is the offense for the offense, especially going into next season. You get the offensive line is going to have some new guys on it, but all the skill positions and the quarterback, they'll all be back, except for Michael Petway. But all the tight ends will be back. Tariq Milton will be back. Breece Hall will be back. You have a lot of good, you know, Sean Shaw will be back. So you're going to have a lot of continuity on the offense going into next season, that hopefully they should be able to have, they'll have their general scheme down a little bit earlier, and they should be better earlier in the season next year.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, should. Yeah, but we'll see. You know what? If they start slow next year and they still keep improving and they finish 9-3, that's cool. 8-4, whatever.
Yeah,
that's fine. True. I can live with that.
All right, I do want to turn our attention to the game real quick, but before we do that, I need to throw it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast, and we're back. All right, so kind of just a few things here and there about the game that's coming up, because to be honest, I don't know that anyone really expects Kansas to honestly compete in this game. My biggest hope is that they're able to keep it close, but so really, we'll kind of just look. What do you think is going to be the biggest matchup in this game that's going to determine whether this is a close game or Kansas gets blown out?
I think it's going to be, if Iowa State's offensive line can dominate in the trenches like they did against Texas, and keep running lanes open for Breece, that will be a huge factor, because then they'll control the clock. And the great thing too with Breece Hall is that he's capable of busting off a big run. Unlike, you know, David had his limitations or whatever when it comes to speed and actually busting off, you know, an 80-yard run. David never did that. Breece Hall is perfectly capable of doing that. So you can keep pounding away at the run game, and sometimes he's just going to bust through for 20 or 30 yards, or he may bust through completely. So you still have some big play potential with him. That'll go a long ways. And as far as on the other side of the ball, it's Iowa State. What we saw last week is that when the defense is allowed to be a little bit more aggressive, where they play the corners up, they don't play quite so soft a coverage. They play the corners at 5 yards, and then, you know, and then they play man coverage from there and try to lock people up man to man. And then, you know, the linebackers are free to fly around a little bit. I would say the defense is really, really good. They're suffocating is what they are. And, you know, Texas, up until the last drive of that first half, Texas had 50 something yards of a total offense going into that last drive before the halftime. I mean, it's when that defense is playing really, and we saw it against Oklahoma too, is when they're allowed to be a little bit more aggressive, they can hold down literally anybody. But we'll see. We'll see if they stick with that through a whole game, or if, you know, towards the end of the half, they drop back into that prevent. And if they do drop into a prevent, you know, can everybody maintain their assignments? Because then if they don't, Kansas in theory could bust off a couple long receptions, but we'll see.
Yeah, so that kind of is a natural follow-up then. What do you think is going to have to happen for Kansas to be contending in this game, for them to either keep it close or even, you know, somehow magically pull off an upset?
Kansas is going to have to – they're going to have to get deep play. They're going to have to get big plays. I just don't see, as far as even running it on the ground, I'm not sure how they will be able to grind it out on the ground. I don't think that's a good strategy for them. They'll have to get deep plays. So they'll have to test deep. They'll have to test the safeties deep, which Greg Eisworth and Lawrence White, I would argue, are the best safety pairing in the conference. They're both very, very good in deep coverage. The corners have been hit or miss so far, but they've played better recently. So they'll want to push it downfield, and on defense, they're going to have to create they're going to need to create turnovers. They're going to need to create turnovers, and they're going to have to they're really going to have to bottle up Breece Hall. If you get to this point where Brock Purdy's throwing it 50 times or whatever, like he did against Oklahoma State, then, you know, we'll see what happens, because that, you know, if he's throwing it that often, that means Kansas is probably getting ready to drop back in coverage, and, you know, they could do what Oklahoma State did and then turn around and get a couple picks when they're sitting, you have an extra guy sitting in the middle of the field that ordinarily isn't there. So creating turnovers on defense and getting some explosive plays on offense will be Kansas's secret sauce to keeping it close / you know, potentially pulling off a victory, I think, is what they're going to have to do. If they let Iowa State control tempo and they try to grind out drives and stuff like that, I don't think that's a recipe for success for Kansas.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the most important thing is that they need the defense to make some big plays, whether that is.
Yeah, the turnovers have to be
three and outs in a row.
There has to be turnovers. Yeah. I would say it is one of the best teams in the country, period, at not going three and out. They almost never, I think they've only gone 8-3 now, like 16 or 18 times or something like that all year. They basically, they almost never. What was that?
I said, that's crazy.
Yeah. They're really good at not going 3-and-out. But if you can force turnovers and if you can take advantage on special teams, especially if you can get, if you can block a punt, or if you can, make some, you know, be solid in the kicking game as far as making field goals, you know, that's how you can keep games close. Special teams is potentially a winning area for them. I would say special teams is really good in some places and really bad in other places. So that could be a potential spot where they could try to sneak an advantage, but, you know, we'll see. But the turnovers are going to be huge, and it'll be critical because the Iowa State offense is, generally speaking, very, very good at not hurting themselves and getting stupid penalties and things like that. When it does happen, they go in spurts where they'll get a bunch of false starts right in a row because if people aren't quite on the same page with the snap count. But, you know, for the most part, the team does a good job of not beating themselves. So Kansas is going to have to be more detail-oriented. They're going to have to limit penalties and create turnovers.
Yeah, okay. So I guess, I mean, I don't think what our predictions would be any kind of surprise to anybody, but what do you think is actually going to happen in this game? So give me like a score prediction or really anything that you think in terms of predicting how this game's going to go.
Well, Texas getting off to a fast start against Texas is very out of the norm for Iowa State. It wouldn't surprise me if Kansas did hang around for at least the first quarter, if not even going into halftime, if they're kind of hanging around, maybe only down a touchdown or two. But Iowa State is a second half team, and when they can, and John Haycock on defense, his defensive adjustments are routinely superb. So if Kansas is finding room in the first half, that room will probably not be there in the second half. So they'll have to make their own adjustments. But so I think in the second half is when you start, the defense will start pressing a little bit more. They will start to kind of suffocate a little bit. And that's when Iowa State can really lean on the run game, let Breece Hall give, you know, if Breece Hall ends up with 25 or 30 carries in this game, that is a very good sign for Iowa State. It means they're moving the ball, means they're scoring points, that they, and they've got this game in hand. So I think in the second half, you'll see a steady dose of Breece Hall and a defense that kind of starts locking up a little bit. And then, you know, we're probably getting right about that covers. But I think the line right now is like 23.5 or something like that. And that's probably, and I think that's actually a pretty good line. I would say probably in that, you know, a 21 to 28 point victory for Iowa State.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear you say that Iowa State's a second half team, because part of that whole Twitter incident was me.
Yeah.
Guaranteeing that Kansas would not be down by four touchdowns at halftime. And if that,
but
happened,
you said, no, actually, because you originally said that they wouldn't lose by four touchdowns. And I said, I can't remember exactly how it went, but then I was being snarky and turned around. I was like, so we're doing this podcast at halftime, or?
Right. And so I said, right, if they were down by four touchdowns at halftime, I would jump on an emergency halftime podcast with you guys. Sounds like that wouldn't even be possible if it actually happened, just because you guys wouldn't be available for it. But
yeah, we did. Most of us would be either too drunk or too occupied to do so. So,
yeah. But I will definitely accept the revision that if they are down by four touchdowns at halftime, then I will come on the pod and you guys can definitely beat me up for it next week. So I normally like to move off after losses and not think about it, but I will definitely deserve that given everything that happened over on Twitter. But I do agree that Iowa State, from everything I've seen, seems to be more of a second half team. Kansas is a lot of the same way. They have a really hard time getting started quickly. And so in a way, this almost helps Kansas in that if they don't get off to a quick start, Iowa State probably is not well positioned to, you know, get up big at the beginning of the game, which is usually Kansas' problem, is that they get off to a slow start, and then by the time they actually get it turned on, they're so far behind that they're either getting desperate and make mistakes, or they just don't have enough to come all the way back. I think that they are going to make this more of a game than people expect, just because it's going to be close at half. Kansas is going to fade a little bit down the stretch as Iowa State really kind of pushes them. I do think that Iowa State probably wins by about three touchdowns, so somewhere in like the 21 to 24 point range. But I think that they're going to pull away late in the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, and then coast at that point.
Yeah, especially with the running game, if they can really pound away at the running game, you start wearing down the defense, and they can start just moving the ball in chunks on the ground. That stuff usually starts happening towards the end of the third quarter, end of the fourth quarter, and stuff like that. I hope that they learned their lesson last week, is that getting out to an early lead is a lot better than trying to come back in the second half. I hope they learned their lesson and they try to do that and they try to stay aggressive to begin the game, but we'll see. That would be Texas last week was out of the norm. It's not like an anomaly necessarily, but it's out of the norm for what Iowa State generally does at the beginning of the game. But you know, hopefully maybe that's one of the developments that now we're seeing late seasons. Now all of a sudden Iowa State gets off to fast starts. You know, who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, we will go ahead and leave it there. Levi, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can the people find you online?
All of my Iowa State stuff is at, you know, is on the site widerightnally.com or on Twitter, which is at widertnattylt. If you want to see tweets about other things not Iowa State related, I have a personal account. It's at Levi R. Stev, STEV. I tweet about some Iowa State stuff, but not much. I usually save that for the Wide Right account, but sometimes you'll see like video games, woodworking, I don't know, whatever comes to my mind.
Yep, I know exactly how that works. All right, well, we will go ahead and leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere like that. You can subscribe to the podcast there so you get every episode once it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars and nice comments, we would love it. But if you do want to get in contact with the podcast, comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that, you can email us, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We'll go ahead and leave it there. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.